Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Fletcher Previn to the broadcast. Fletcher is the Chief Information Officer of IBM, a 106-year-old, $140 billion technology company. Since becoming CIO this past May, Fletcher is focused on creating an agile culture to increase the pace of innovation and is responsible for delivering a productive IT environment to several hundred thousand IBM employees, contractors, and business partners worldwide. Fletcher's held a variety of positions at IBM during his 10-plus years with the company, including most recently Vice President of Workplace as a Service. Prior to joining IBM, Fletcher was a manager with Walmart's Enterprise Systems Management Group. Fletcher holds a bachelor's degree in political science and German from Connecticut College. I recently caught up with Fletcher in his office in Armonk, New York, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Fletcher described how IBM's culture helps it attract and retain world-class talent. Principle 2, infrastructure, as Fletcher discussed how his team is leveraging cognitive and blockchain technologies to enhance aspects of the IT portfolio. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Fletcher describes the myriad ways in which IT creates and enables a productive environment for IBMers. And Principle 5, external partnerships, as Fletcher shared IBM's philosophy of listening and learning from others. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal, an exclusive network of the top freelance software developers, designers, and finance experts in the world. I recently caught up with TopTal CEO Tasso Duval, and he offered the following top five trends for hiring top talent.
The top five trends for hiring top talent are, one, hiring talent remotely, ensuring that they are able to work remotely and that companies are hiring talent remotely. Two, leveraging teams in different dispersed locations. If you're hiring in-house and you're leveraging remotely a bit, being open to having talent even in the same time zone is an important factor that we've noticed. Three, highly skilled teams becoming the majority rather than the lead, meaning ensuring that the team composition comprises of predominantly high-skilled labor rather than high-skilled labor supported by lower-skilled labor. Four, infrastructure being created to support those teams, ensuring that the teams in-house are connected with the remote teams that are working together. And five, flexibility with offer packages. We've seen that even the in-house talent that are joining companies from Google to Facebook and on are interested in demanding that there is a remote component to their job, whether it's one day a week or full time, be included within their offer packages.
Fletcher Previn, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. Fletcher, you've been the Chief Information Officer of IBM since May of this year, so 5 or so months now. And I wonder, actually, if I could begin the conversation prior to your ascent. I'm curious how you found out that you were going to be selected as the CIO of IBM, and likewise, what sort of preparations you went through before taking on the role.
Yeah, well, I had been working in the IT department at IBM for some time and had supported two previous CIOs in various capacities, one as a kind of chief of staff role and then in an executive capacity running the workplace as a service and back office functions. And so I think I'm sort of lucky in that regard in the sense that I kind of had a pretty good sense of what the job would entail. And I think that did allow me to hit the ground running and have less lead time in terms of getting up to speed and being able to execute our strategy.
Once you took the role, to what extent was it a case of continuing with the strategy versus refashioning it in various ways?
Yeah, I'd say it's a combination thereof, Ryan. I mean, I think in terms of changes that I'm implementing and strategies that we're continuing, I'm 100% committed to continuing to embrace agile ways of working. Similarly committed to continuing to strive to provide a productive environment to our roughly 380,000 employees around the globe. And I think, you know, anytime you take a new job like that, it's always a good opportunity to sort of take stock of what is our purpose here? What is our mission? And so as it pertains to IT at IBM or the Office of the CIO, I think we have a deceptively simple purpose. You know, it's difficult to execute, but it's easy to articulate, which is first and foremost to create a productive environment for IBMers. Secondly, to enhance IBM's ability to attract and retain top talent, to be the sort of digital front end of the culture transformation that our chairman is trying to effect throughout the company. To enable the cognitive enterprise and everything that goes with that, and Watson technologies, AI, machine learning, and otherwise. And then last but certainly not least, to protect IBM's information and as well as that of our customers. And so I think, you know, we spend a lot of time in IBM thinking about IT as a driver of culture change. You know, in a lot of ways, culture is sort of the new currency. And so I think, you know, maybe said more simply, our mission in IT is to empower every person at IBM. And so every person in CIO understands that they're working in service of the IBMer and our clients. And then I think it's been really rewarding for me in terms of, you know, IBM is a company of purpose. And I think if you look at the breadth of the types of work that IBM is involved in with our clients, it's pretty inspiring. And we know that's one of the main reasons people come to work at IBM. And so, you know, I've been focused on making sure we're really clear about having a deeper meaning that has a purpose, and that's what we all bring to work every day. And that our core purpose in the company is really to unlock a new culture of work and create dynamic teams that come together, not by org chart, but by the job at hand.
Interesting. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about culture. You know, Peter Drucker had the famous question, the culture eats strategy for breakfast. I think it's certainly an important part of what you're enabling, and as you say, as part of the chairman's broader mission. Can you talk a bit about both the cultural transformation, how you would define that, and also IT's role in that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, IT's role is sort of supporting unlocking the creativity inside the organization and helping everybody achieve their potential. And so I'm familiar with the Peter Drucker quote, although there's, I think, some debate about who actually said it and whether it's breakfast or lunch, but let's assume it was him. And he's absolutely right. I mean, you know, what is a company? It's ultimately a collection of people, and companies succeed or fail on the basis of their people. And so culture is a function of how work gets done. And so we put a lot of focus on making sure that we're working towards achieving the right kind of culture. And, you know, over time, people try to steal your technology. That's just kind of what happens. But it's pretty difficult to steal someone else's culture. And so for all the reasons you mentioned, we're intensely focused on that as a, you know, we think about IT, a kind of equal parts technology and equal parts culture. And because of that, it's critically important that we are building teams of people who are passionate about their craft and curious, and that this is not a transactional arrangement, that there's a higher purpose of being here and people love what they do. And so at the end of the day, you know, we're looking to hire people who are kind, passionate about their craft, and committed to IBM's purpose of being a company of innovation that matters, that provides value to clients.
You mentioned enabling cognitive, and there's certainly been a lot written about IBM's focus on AI, and more specifically Watson, as you pointed out. Can you talk about the what IT is doing to enable that, what sorts of tools you're providing, how you get involved in the technology, those sorts of things?
Yeah, and first let me just sort of back up a little bit and say, like, you know, what we call cognitive, right, which is, I think, sort of AI, machine learning combined with industry knowledge and security running on our cloud. That's, I think that's not just kind of another feature of technology. It might sort of be the ultimate technology, right? And you have a situation today where Moore's Law has been true since 1965, right? I think the first computer had a few thousand transistors in it, and a current video gaming console in your living room has, you know, somewhere around 7 billion. And so when you start to compound on a very large base, you start to get some really interesting capabilities. And so I think, you know, the ability for us to leverage things like Watson to reason over large data sets and assist humans in making better decisions is really going to completely change every aspect of our work lives and our personal lives in a positive way. As it pertains to, you know, specific projects that I'm involved in that are leveraging Watson technology, you know, we've been heavily investing in blockchain solutions, as well as using Watson to help us with some of the larger data sets like helping our help desk agents sift through the records on every call to kind of get to the right answer more quickly. We're using Watson technology to improve the search effectiveness of our internal intranet as well as IBM.com. On the blockchain front, we've got a lot of projects underway internally and externally. I think, you know, I would give one example of we have a global financing group that provides financing to thousands of IBM business partners and suppliers. And occasionally you have disputes or goods not received and partners can't pay their invoices. And so typically they would file a dispute and then settle up when the issue is resolved. And then kind of further complicating it, business partners are sometimes using different systems and they might not be compatible with each other. So this is kind of a long, labor-intensive process, and at any given time can have north of $100 million tied up in the system. And so our team used agile methods and launched an MVP of a blockchain solution in 3 months using the Hyperledger fabric, running on the IBM cloud, obviously, and created a trusted network which allows only members to share information with each other. And so those are the sorts of technologies we're bringing to bear. I think over time, every part of the IT portfolio will be enhanced with cognitive technologies in some way.
Very interesting. And I'm curious also, I'm always fascinated by CIOs of companies that are tech-centric themselves. There are, of course, many, many CIOs, most of them, one might argue, who where their department is the preponderance of IT talent in the corporation. Certainly, there's a growing amount of knowledge and interest and curiosity and even skills outside of the IT department of most companies. But yours is an organization, of course, that has a great deal of technical talent outside of IT. And I wonder how you see IT adding special value in light of that it isn't a monopoly on technology talent, but rather a broader ecosystem that you're playing in.
Yeah, well, I think several parts to that answer. I think one would be, as I mentioned before, you know, our mission is really to create a productive environment for people. And that includes, in a company like IBM, a lot of people in research and technical people and people building products and people engaged in delivery of service to our customers. And I think, you know, I'm sort of the benefactor of being at a company like that. It means I have access to things like IBM Research, IBM's managed security services, IBM's teams that build products and software, and then having the IBM cloud as a platform to deliver those things. And so that is certainly a force multiplier on our ability to execute against the mission. And we do. We partner with all parts of the business that I just mentioned, right? We partner with IBM security to help keep IBM safe. We partner with IBM's GBS and GTS services. We partner with the product teams. You know, we provide input back into things that are being developed for commercial use. And then I think just kind of philosophically, when you have an environment like that with a lot of knowledge workers, it does require some different approaches to how we think about delivering IT services. And I'd say at a high level, it's a strategy of give people the right devices and services that are fit for purpose for the job they're trying to do, manage those assets in a modern way, and drive self-sufficiency in the environment or self-service, right? So give people the right devices, as I said, is, you know, not the lowest cost option, but equipment and things that are fit for purpose. Manage them in a modern way, right? Can I leverage new technologies, new techniques, new ways to provision those services, activate it over a cloud, app stores? Think about the way you manage mobile devices today. Can you manage other assets a similar way? And if I do those first two things correctly, you know, I can then afford to create world-class support experiences for people and provide the same kind of support experience that's really informed from where your consumer life is going, right? I think we still certainly want to be able to provide all of the kind of traditional mechanisms to get help. But increasingly, if things are just simple to use and simple to resolve, a lot of people like the option to be able to self-serve and self-resolve those kinds of problems, which I think I would say is another big focus for me. We are finding that when we take the time to do the engineering work properly and infuse the right level of design and UX into the services that we deliver, that people will pull things from us. We don't have to push it on them. And when that happens, we create advocates for IT, but for our products and services. A lot of the kind of traditional OCM and advocacy and adoption and enablement requirements sort of melt away because the service is just easy to consume. And in support of that, one of the changes that I did make in the makeup of my direct reports is the addition of a visual design and user experience team. Going forward, anything that we build in IT, whether that's a web page, a mobile app, a desktop application, even an email that we send out to the company or a sign that's going to be hung up on the elevators or something. Point is, if a lot of people are going to experience something, we make sure that it's gone through this design and user experience team to ensure it's coming out the other end looking like something from your consumer life and not like something that you might have expected out of a large enterprise IT shop many years ago. Right? People talk a lot about the kind of consumerization of IT. That has a lot to do with what things look like and how easy they are to consume. And there's a famous quote from Thomas Watson Jr., good design is good business. And I think if you look back at some of those products from IBM, the ThinkPad, the Selectric, the mainframe, the System 360, right? Those were like stalwarts of industrial design, and they're still in books about great design. And so translating that into building similarly great software that's easy to use in IT services is a huge focus for me.
Very interesting. And I'm curious also, one of the last one, though, as you said, not the least of the purposes or missions that you noted was protecting IBM's information. And I'm curious how you organize security and topics related to that in light of the fact that yours is an organization that is pushing so much innovation as well.
Yes, and we're in every business, in every industry, you know, a lot of regulated spaces, U.S. federal, public sector, healthcare, financial services, or otherwise. So we have a tremendous focus on security. And, you know, the internet is sort of increasingly a hostile place and becoming kind of a domain of warfare. And so I'm lucky in that IBM has a world-class managed security services under Mark Van Zettelhoff that, you know, if you look at the kind of Gartner quadrant, we're a leading provider of managed security services that I also get to take advantage of internally. We do, of course, also have a CISO function, but I think one of the kind of philosophically things we've been pursuing is embedding security into everyone's job. So if you're involved in the delivery of any kind of IT function in that squad or group of people that are performing an end-to-end function, there is also a focus on security. And so security is really part of everybody's job, and people with delivery responsibility, that can't be offboarded to some abstracted third party that's auditing. It's got to be kind of embedded into the day-to-day thinking and the way that we work.
IBM has a great number of clients, and as you point out, in a variety of different segments, public sector, private sector, various industries. A common client, certainly not exclusive by any stretch of the imagination, but many of the clients of IBM are your fellow chief information officers. And I wonder how you engage CIOs as the CIO of IBM, either as an advocate for what IBM is developing and highlighting your own use, or perhaps other sort of advice that you provide CIOs in your peer, as I say, your peer group.
Yeah, well, I always enjoy getting to have the opportunity to hear from IBM's clients, which also, you know, that CIO community tends to have a lot of overlap with IBM's customer base. And without exception, I always learn something new anytime I sit down with a customer or a CIO or otherwise. You know, in general, I'd say even if a customer works in a different industry than I do, we, in particular, when I meet with CIOs, there's always a lot of common ground on challenges and goals. And in general, I'd say they all want to move all appropriate workloads to the cloud, embrace agile practices, innovate at speed, and bring cognitive technologies to bear in their environments.
Interesting, aligning nicely with some of the things you've already mentioned as your own themes.
Yeah, I mean, I think the community of CIOs of large enterprises, you know, as I said, we may have different industries that we support, but from an IT perspective, there's a lot of common ground. And so I think, you know, another big focus for us internally as it pertains to culture is to embrace a culture of listening and learning from others. You know, there is always something high value to be learned in talking to anybody. And what best practices can we bring back into IBM? And do we have our antennae up all the time? And are people connected to what's going on in the industry and what's going on in their community is a focus for us. And so I hold myself to the same standard. And anytime I meet with another CIO or one of our customers, you know, without exception, I get something that is valuable that I can bring back into IBM and try to synthesize into our own environment.
a lot was made when you took on the role of your youth. Although if I've got my math correct, you're just a bit older than the millennials, but certainly not far from them. And I'm curious what perspective you bring to making IBM a more attractive place to the millennial force.
Well, I think, you know, as I said, we know that one of the main reasons people come to IBM is to work at a company of impact and purpose. And, you know, whether you're booking travel, using a credit card, buying something at retail, working in financial services, you're using IBM technology. And I think some of the more recent work that IBM's involved in around Watson Oncology and blockchain, and there's a lot of really kind of exciting technology that is going to impact people's lives that I think motivates millennials in particular to want to work at IBM. From my side of it, you know, I take very seriously kind of my role in helping create a productive environment for IBMers, and I care kind of deeply about the company's mission. And so, you know, I think creating the environmentals where great people want to come to work, and a lot of that has to do with providing great tooling, creating challenging work for people to work on solving difficult problems, being made better by the smart people that you work with, and then also having choice, right? I think, you know, I don't have a formula for creativity. Everybody kind of likes to work differently. But I do have a formula for no creativity. And it looks like lockdown, disablement, turning things off, being very prescriptive about how work has to get done. And so to the extent that we can, we really like to pursue an IT strategy of enablement versus enforcement. And so, you know, if you think about it, it is a competitive advantage to be able to have people come to your company and decide what kind of device they want to use, what tools they think are most effective for them. Be a little bit like, you know, if you hired a musician, a person came in and said, well, I have spent the last 14 years learning how to play the piano. And you said, yeah, that's great. Do you mind playing the trumpet while you're here? You know, they would mind, and a talented person would probably get a job somewhere else. And so being in a position to create the environmentals necessary to attract great talent is a big focus for us as well.
We've talked about a number of rising trends, AI, ML, a lot of the other aspects of cognitive. I'm curious, are there any other sort of rising technology trends that are particularly intriguing to you?
Well, I think IoT is certainly very interesting, and everything that's going to come with the collection of massive amounts of sensor data, and how do you leverage that data to improve people's lives and work more effectively. I think self-driving cars is a really interesting, you know, autonomous vehicles. I don't think it's a huge stretch to say that within our lifetime, it might become illegal to manually drive cars on certain roadways, right? If you think about
Indeed.
The human body is sort of engineered to go like 10 to 15 miles an hour maximum. And I think there will be a time where people will look back on that as just kind of like a crazy thing people used to do. You'd get in a 5,000-pound steel box, go 80 miles an hour down the road, and on an annual basis, 1.4 million people would die doing that. And so I think, you know, that's a technology that really has the potential to save millions of lives. And then I think democratizing access to world-class healthcare, and I kind of, you know, I briefly mentioned it earlier, but if you look at like the work that IBM's involved in with Watson for Oncology, and it's not possible for every doctor in every local town to be aware of every single drug trial going on and what particular medical treatment is going to have the greatest outcome for your particular genomic makeup and your particular disease. And, you know, that's going to be a huge contribution to society. And so I think those kinds of things are very exciting. And I do think we're like, you know, we're right on the cusp of some not just incremental technology, but really revolutionary technology. And so I think if you're in IT and you're bored, you're just not paying attention to what's going on.
Well said. Well, Fletcher Previn, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT today. It's been a great conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks for your time.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.